You're listening to Nutty Biting. What? Oh, sorry. You're listening to Biting Nutty. No. You're listening to Nut Bite. No. Nutty Bite. I mean, you're listening to Nutty Bites. No, really. You're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nukchess, and I've got a very, very, very special episode of Nutty Bites for you. This episode is awesome indeed. This is the 100th episode. That's not counting dog days for summer or Christmas podcasts or any of the bonuses, but 100 official episodes. And we've been doing this podcast for 6 years. May seem kind of a low milestone for a six-year-old podcast, but let's remember this started out as a monthly podcast, and now it's a twice-monthly podcast. And so to celebrate with me, I have, as usual...
Hi, I'm very, very, very special.
I mean, very, very special.
Tech, the antagonist.
And we have back from our very first Nutty Debate, our first guest...
It is I, the serial killer. Not using my special themed appropriate voice yet.
Okay. So what we're doing here is we're going to be revisiting, you know, kind of going back to the early days. We're going to revisit one of the first Nutty Bites, Nutty Debates we've ever done. And that is, we're going to expand upon it a little bit, but that was, who's your favorite Batman? And then it went into who's your favorite Joker. Now, why are we doing this again? Because things have changed. We've got a new Batman we need to consider. It's very important. We got two new Batman. Batmen?
Batsmen?
Batsmen? That we need to consider. And we need to address these things. And we're also going to expand, if we've got time, into other new comic adaptations. And with us while we record this live, we have two of our patrons with us. We've got Jax. Hi, Jax. And we've got Jason Banks, who left Mass Effect for us. So we should feel special.
Hi, Daddy.
And before we go in, I am going to thank our patrons. Because of our patrons, we are doing this twice a month. That means you are getting twice as much Nutty Bites for your ear holes. And who doesn't want more of that?
Well, so this is all their fault.
This is all their fault.
Thanks, guys.
And it's pretty great to have oh my gosh. I'm sorry, but Timba is in the chat.
And it appears that Timba is now trolling us.
Yes, because he says Batman is the worst hero ever.
Not entirely wrong.
Yay!
Let's not derail the... Right, so let's thank our patrons, and then we'll move on to the derailing conversation.
Okay, well, we want to thank Jason Banks for being our top dollar patron.
Thanks, Daddy.
We want to thank Beth. We want to thank Aaron. We want to thank Aurora Lee. We want to thank Susan. We want to thank Melissa, the Bathtub Mermaid. Check out her podcast. We want to thank Susanna. We want to thank Frank. We want to thank Kinsey. Check out Brazilianisms. We want to thank Ian. Ian does the Down Below podcast, and they are just wrapping up on their Babylon 5 podcast. We want to thank Harold. We want to thank Jen of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast. We want to thank Patrick Scafito. We want to thank Shane Poole, our diehard fan of
Hi,
Red
Shane.
Dwarf Introcast. We want to thank Rich the TT. We want to thank Dagny of... I don't know a podcast, sorry. We want to thank Mike. We want to thank Ken from Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone. And we want to thank Lynette from the Bicast. And you should check out all of those podcasts. And if I had promos for all of them, you'd hear them. But all the ones I have promos for, you have already heard them. So let's get started. Our favorite Batman. So let's remember, it was pretty much a group consensus that Kevin Conroy... was our favorite Batman.
Right, so Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman from the animated series, is our favorite Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And
The caveat that I said that Michael Keaton was my favorite Bruce Wayne.
Sure.
There's a difference.
But the voice that Kevin Conroy can put, and the inflection and the warmth and the character, both as Bruce Wayne and as Batman, makes him at least my favorite. And I think of all the adaptations, my favorite storyline of the Batmans is the Arkham series of video games. And I've just been going through lately playing the last one, Arkham Knight, on PS4, and it's a pretty bad game, and it relies too heavily on the Batmobile being a tank that can run over people, but for some reason doesn't kill them. It's a bizarre game, but it's got that great animated series voice cast that makes it so redeemable. And Kevin Conroy as Batman, oh my stars. But has been surpassed as my favorite Batman.
Yes, things have changed.
Things
so,
have changed.
As we said, there have been two different Batmen since then. So is one of them a voice for Arkham games?
Negative.
Okay.
One of them is Will Arnett's Batman from the
yes.
Lego Batman movies, who stole the first Lego movie entirely.
Yes, yes. And I'm quite aware of that one.
And
BoJack Horseman is Batman.
Yes.
We're forgetting because he is the future Ben Affleck.
Oh.
I still haven't seen Batman v Superman. And
no, but you did see him in the cutscene of Suicide Squad.
Yes.
Right.
Ben, I forgot
ben
about Batfleck.
Batfleckman. Yes.
Batfleck.
Who, he certainly has a presence.
Ouch.
I'm not sure I can judge him by either of the movies he's been in, because unfortunately they were fairly weak movies as
right,
far
but
as DC
didn't
goes.
Didn't that movie suffer from a horrible case of Zack Snyder?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. It suffered from Zack Snyder wants to be overly religious with Superman-ism.
But I have to say I'm not hating on Batfleck.
You know, no, I'm not, because Ben Affleck has definitely got the chops to be able to pull it off. If he's
still better than Bat Nipples.
Yeah, he makes a very good Bruce Wayne. He cuts a perfect figure for Bruce Wayne, and he seems to be trying to play that older, tired Bruce Wayne that is needed by the mythology of Batman v Superman. He's been at it for quite some time, and he's growing tired, and that's why he's trying to form the Justice League. Although in DC's ham-fisted way, they're trying entirely too quickly in one movie to make that happen. So, yeah. And then Suicide Squad, it was just that one little teaser, which was nice. It shows that he can be a ruthless Bruce Wayne as well. But no, he's definitely not my new favorite.
I've only seen the Suicide Squad and a couple of scenes from the trailer for Aquaman. Or is it Justice League where he's trying to recruit Aquaman? I'm just watching it for what's Khal Drogo's name again?
Jason Momoa.
Momoa.
I couldn't remember his name. He's Khal Drogo. I was watching that for Khal Drogo, and so that's all I really have to judge Batfleck on.
Yeah.
I'm not hating it, but I'm still gonna put him right there in a nice steady middle
between George Clooney and Val Kilmer.
He's got the respect for the character.
Yeah,
I don't know whether he's been given the good venue yet to show that, but he's got the respect for the character.
Yeah, I think he's hand and fist over Clooney and Kilmer.
We know Kevin Smith would kick his taco if he didn't think yeah,
and I think that's yes. why that the Lego Batman movie was such a massive success, and why I loved it so much, and why Will Arnett's performance shone so much. It's something that you just said, that it's the love for the character. He has the passion for the character, and he's been given a venue to show for it. And Will Arnett doing his I am Batman voice is incredible. And the fact that I was blown away that in the bajillion movies that they've made, even that weird time in the 60s, which was a wonderful joke to throw into the movie, that with all of that stuff that they did, all of the fact that it's a stupid animated kids movie sponsored by a Danish toy company, they showed more love and more passion for the source material and understanding of the main characters than any of the other of the live action movies I've seen so far. That they get the Joker, they got Harley Quinn, they got Robin, yes. they got Batman, and they did it in such an honest and loving way while completely having fun with it and completely making it yes. their own thing.
And I yes. love that every adaptation is canon.
Mm.
And they reference it all.
Condiment King.
Oh, you stole my thunder. That was going to say the two
Not
words.
Just that, but the fact that they reference the parade with Prince music in the middle of downtown, yes, with raining dollars and everybody getting sick. They reference 66 Batman a couple of times. Yep. And they're able to make everything that's canon work. And I really think that Will Arnett's Batman is definitely my number one Batman right now. Here's the kicker. Is because you don't see much Bruce Wayne. It's pretty much Batman all the time. So is his Bruce Wayne the best Bruce Wayne?
Microwaving his lobster thermidor.
Yes.
The question, I guess, is does it hold up without Bruce Wayne being a major element? Does he hold up without the need for Bruce Wayne? Because when we look at Michael Keaton, he's a good Bruce Wayne, but not the best Batman.
Right. I think Batfleck might even be a better Bruce Wayne than, a better Batman than Keaton. But I don't know.
When we look at George Clooney, he was kind of a good Bruce Wayne, but a horrible Batman.
No, he wasn't good at any of those things.
What about Val Kilmer?
Any of them either.
I'll give Val Kilmer that he had the presence to be Batman.
No.
But not the... I don't think he had the gravitas.
He should have played Iceman. Fanciest
word possible. But Christian Bale had the all-round package.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He was a good presence as Batman. He definitely put his all into trying to be as physical as he needed to be and fight in that realistic way and be there and actually do his own work. And he was a good, subdued, especially towards the latter movies, tired Batman. He was, or Bruce Wayne. He was that, I'm trying to lead the double life and it really isn't easy. It's not that flawless, the old Adam West days where, oh yes, I can wear these two disguises perfectly fine. Everything is sunshine and rainbows.
I like that. I like the Nolan trilogy. I had my problems with them, of course. And, the fact that the villain spent the entire movie talking like this was annoying as hell.
You mean Deckard Bain?
Deckard Bain.
Hello, Batman. Stay a while and listen.
That was horrible, but I like that trilogy. I thought they were well done, and Anne Hathaway in leather pants, but not my favorite.
I like the trilogy. I think that they're good movies. It's one of the few successes DC has in live action so far. But I'm not as and I like Christian Bale as an actor. I'm sure if I knew him in person, I wouldn't like him very much. But I like him as an actor, and I've liked him since Newsies. I am not as much a fan of his Batman or his Bruce Wayne, honestly.
And he's lacking one key thing. A ninth ab.
Yes, a ninth ab, exactly. And that's what puts Will Arnett's Batman above all other Batman, is the ninth ab. But I put Christian Bale again in the middle of the pack there.
What really saved Christian Bale in that trilogy was the fact that he had an amazing supporting cast.
Yes. Even with
Alfred,
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman and Anne Hathaway and Katie Holmes and all the rest.
A little background stuff in there, like the background characters, the supporting players, everybody was on point. I mean, you can say what you want about his voice, but Tom Hardy was a good casting for it. They just made a really horrible decision to mask his voice.
I had hoped going in,
Sir Michael Caine, as Mr. Banks reminds us.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Of course. The casting for Bane, having just played two of the Arkham games when the movie came out and knowing that Bane was going to be the villain, I really wanted it to be the massive luchador Bane.
Yeah, I wanted San Priscan prisoner. Yeah, they grew up in a prison, had the rough life, and they paid some respect to that.
Right, but it's the voice actor that they had playing it in the games whose name I don't know, I'm sorry, but it was just amazing, and it was he's jammed full of Joker toxin, and he's He's just this big crazy luchador was so much better than Deckard Bain. Stay a while and listen. Yes,
you know we needed the guy from the Clooney Batman, the Bane from Clooney's Batman world.
Yeah, with but a he needs better to voice talk and presence and actually act. Yeah. Wasn't that a wrestler?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was some generic pro wrestler they picked up somewhere.
No, I think he was known at the time, but I can't remember. You told
me we couldn't get Batista to play that?
Oh, that would have been good.
Ooh.
He was too busy doing Guardians of the Galaxy.
I know, and he's
that was later.
Yeah, he's an amazing Drax, but you're telling me that Batista couldn't have done a great Bane?
That would have been good. Ooh, or The Rock?
No.
Yeah.
No. The Rock's got the physical presence, but he's too nice a guy.
Oh,
even when he's trying to be
a
badass, I don't think he really comes off as a badass.
But the thing that was Nolan was trying to push about Bane is that Bane thinks he's the good guy and thinks he has the right motives, and The Rock could definitely sell that. Adding on to this, who's your favorite Alfred?
Sorry, I was just looking at the actor for Bane. His name is apparently Jeep Swenson.
Hmm. Okay, that's no one I know.
And kudos to him because he did a great job.
Yes.
Favorite Batman? Favorite Alfred?
Alfred.
Yeah, is Sir Michael Caine.
Sir Michael Caine.
There's that one line in the thing where he's talking about, you have to protect the people that you love and you have to do these things for the people. Oh, you're talking about this girl. Actually, no, sir. I was talking about myself. Yeah. And I thought that line and the other ones like it were just delivered so wonderfully, so deadpan, so Alfred.
I'm on a fence, and I know Tech can't speak to this, but it's between Michael Caine and the guy from Gotham.
Just looked up his name, Sean Pertwee.
That's it, Pertwee.
And now
related
this is the
to
thing.
Is he
no,
related
I
to
don't think so.
The other Pertwee, the Doctor Who actor?
I don't think so.
I'm not entirely sure, but that's the thing we seem to have missed. We have another Bruce Wayne as well. Oh wait, let's not include him.
No, I don't include him.
What?
Gotham. He's a kid.
The kid from Gotham who is honestly the first season I could not stand that kid one bit for all the wrong reasons.
The only reason to have the Bruce Wayne in that show at all is so that we get Selina Kyle scenes.
Okay.
And so that we have Alfred because Alfred is again amazing. Yeah. In that.
Okay. So having not watched Gotham.
Okay,
and understanding that now this kid is a horrible actor playing a horrible
role.
It's
a bad role,
right? So better or worse than Jake Lloyd in episode one?
Oh, much better, much better.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay, see this kid. It's not his fault as an actor. It is they make Bruce Wayne through the entire first season of the show into a clueless, whiny, insolent brat. He is not at all the young man that will become the Bruce Wayne we know and love.
Joffrey Baratheon?
No, Joffrey was actually more well-mannered in some ways.
Oh,
you know what?
Lucius Malfoy?
I lied. Sean Pertwee is John Pertwee's... I can't say it now.
Yeah.
Stupid red wine. John Pertwee. Thank you. His son.
Wait, Bruce Wayne is the son of Doctor Who?
No. Alfred.
Alfred is the son of Doctor Who.
Yes.
This makes a lot of sense now. It does make a lot of sense that the butler that keeps the whole thing together is a Time Lord.
And I would honestly put him as I would put Gotham's Alfred as my favorite only because he's had more time to develop as a character.
Yeah,
and he does develop in really good ways. You get to see a lot of that reluctant fatherhood, that reluctant father figure in him. That you don't get in screen time in the movies. Because in the movies, he has to be spot on. He has to be at his best. He can't have weak moments because he is, well, a supporting character can't have that time to do that. He needs to be the Rock. Not the Rock, but a Rock. Oh, the Rock as Alfred would be just demented.
No. In the chat, we've got Jason says that he's stuck between Michael Caine and the one from Batman v Superman. So XK, the Alfred from Batman versus Superman, your thoughts? Because we haven't seen it.
I honestly can't remember him.
So he doesn't
that's
count.
That's not a good thing. Well, let's see. I just want to see who it was. Wait a second. No, he's not doing it for me.
So the Alfred that gave the best guilt trip, though, I will say, is from Lego Batman.
I'm just trying to imagine, back to what you guys were saying about Alfred being a rock. Now imagining the Rock as Alfred, and that would be great. It's like, will you take your lobster thermidor on the veranda or in the foyer? Well, actually, it doesn't matter where you're going to take your lobster thermidor.
And I just realized that the Batman v Superman was Jeremy Irons, who is...
And like, you didn't remember
honestly,
that.
Honestly, a phenomenal actor, but he was such a... he was such a minor part of such a spot fest of a movie, to use a wrestling term. It was spot after spot of just big action scenes with very little substance, and he couldn't survive it in my mind.
Yeah, that's such a waste on casting, really.
Yeah.
Timba says, can you smell what Alfred is cooking?
Is it lobster thermidor?
No, because The Rock.
I know, but I was making a Lego Batman joke.
So,
was Alfred in pancakes?
Pancakes.
Oh, the pancakes.
So, Jax and
who needs pants?
Jason are quoting their favorite quotes. What is the point of all those push-ups if you can't even lift a bloody log? And why do we fall, Master Wayne? So we can pick ourselves back up. Okay. So, has our opinions on the best Joker changed at all? And please try to remember to use proper names this time.
Right. So to remember the joke from the first Nutty Debate, the fact that we spent the entire time thinking that the Batman 66 Joker was played, oh man, we said Sid Caesar for the entire episode instead of Cesar Romero.
We knew which one it was. Right. We just had the name wrong.
Right.
Now, in our defense, to take you back 6 years ago, we recorded. It is your fault. Everything's your fault. We recorded the first three Nutty Debates in the basement of Tech's parents' house over Christmas break, and
drunk.
Yeah, we had some wobbly pops beforehand. So
I do believe those episodes open with the sound of us cracking beer.
Maybe. I don't remember. It's been a while since I edited it. At the time, we had said that I think we all agreed that Mark Hamill was our favorite Joker, with Cesar Romero as a runner-up. Mm-hmm. Now, with the addition of Patton Oswalt and Jared Leto, and I think that's it, because Heath Ledger was that year, any changes on favorite Jokers?
I have a small aside that's a back. Because I forgot to credit one of my favorite Batman performances of all time. And that would be, now I'm going to forget his name. My boy Pete Holmes as Batman. I don't know if you've ever seen his Batman series, but it's him being the most incompetently clueless Batman you will ever see.
Okay.
If you have not seen it, I seriously recommend looking it up. There is one that especially stands out where he is on the roof of the Gotham PD right by the bat signal. The commissioner has just called him over and he's talking to the commissioner, and the commissioner takes off his glasses and he goes, "Oh my, where did the commissioner go? Where did you take him?" And it's like, "Batman, it's okay. It's me. Where's the commissioner?" And he puts on his glasses and he goes, "Commissioner, oh, this other guy was here. I thought he kidnapped you." Hysterically bad. Yet one of the best things I have ever seen, because that's again a gleeful poking of fun at a character, and he does so well. Patton Oswalt shows up in that as well as
is that the one Penguin. Where he's Penguin? Okay, that so yes. Patton Oswalt plays the Joker in the Lego Movie. I'm pretty sure. I think that's who it was, and I just felt it was a good Joker, but I felt so it was so wasted because his Penguin was outstanding. And I have never, well, I think Gotham does a different take on Penguin, but in the movies, like Danny DeVito's Penguin was awful and it just made me so upset. And the 66 Batman Penguin was Meredith Baxter. Is that his name? I don't remember. I'm terrible at this. His Penguin was, the animated series was really the only one that was passable.
The Arkham Penguin. Point. With the Coke bottle bottom as his monocle is a fantastic Penguin. The thing that I'll say about the Joker in the Lego Batman, it's the only Joker that has gotten the grin anywhere near what I see in my head.
So we are doing a slight disservice to the man who played the Lego Batman Joker, however, is one of my fellow sweaty, large, bearded guys, Zach Galifianakis.
That's right. It was
the Joker. Sorry, wrong Mr. guy. And Timba just said it. He's like, Lego Batman is Zach Galifianakis. Can't say that because there's a Galifataco, how you spell it, all in one word.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But it's the grin that they got on the character's head that went all the way around. It was just this huge, toothy smile I thought was super well done.
So was Patton Oswalt in that movie at all? No, am I just making stuff up?
I think, was he Robin?
No. Thanks.
Wait, give me a second here.
Patton so Oswalt I'm just going to keep talking while you guys talking. Google everything. Mark Hamill is still my Joker. And I don't see anybody dethroning him in the near while. It's just, it's what we discussed in the first episode. It's the laugh. Yeah. It's the fact that he understands the Joker, that the Joker is unhinged. Mm-hmm. And, I really don't think that the Heath Ledger Joker would get nearly as much love as he does if he hadn't died. And this might sound a little cruel, but I don't think the Heath Ledger Joker was that good. It was great. It was a good performance, but it was only one side of the Joker. And the Joker is multifaceted. The Joker is unhinged. He is a rolling die bouncing down the stairs, and you don't know where it's going to land. He could murder your entire family or give you $1 million because it all depends what he thinks is funny. And that's the Joker. And I think Mark Hamill's the only one that comes close. And Zach Galifianakis did actually a really good job of portraying that. Heath Ledger was only one side. It was the angry Joker. It was the. Yeah. I don't think there was any time in that movie that he smiled.
He definitely grimaced a few times, but I think that was an intentional thing. I don't think he was the Joker that we know and love from growing up.
No, that was Chris Nolan wanting to be the grim dark that ever grimmed a dark.
There is an argument for that, but there's a theory that's floated around on the internet for a while that he is a veteran of some sort that has had a break. That he, if you look at the training he has, the timing he has, the access he has, the people he knows, that he is, yeah,
so,
but at the same
so, time. So that's DC trying to turn the Joker into the Punisher?
I think so.
And I get, and that's exactly what it seems like, is it is.
Because I tell you what, I like Frank Castle better.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, especially, I'll go into that in the other part of this later.
Oh, the guy from Daredevil?
Yeah. All right, wait, so. all right, so I think we've pretty much done. So the Joker, the new Jokers that we've had, are pretty good, but nobody's knocking Mark Hamill off. Yeah,
we didn't talk about the elephant in the room, and that is Joker's fanboy, Jared Leto.
You know, okay, I'm going to talk about that.
Absolutely.
I don't mind it. And here's the unpopular opinion: everybody hates on Suicide Squad. I kind of dug it. There's editing issues, that is for sure, and there's a bunch of problems that I have with it, but I kind of dug the movie, and I really enjoyed it, and it could be the fact that I went in with very low expectations, but very low expectations.
I agree. I enjoy Suicide Squad. I'm not a hater. It's probably DC's best movie for a while. The problem I have with it, with him being there and being part of it, is he's not a member of the Suicide Squad. He is not.
No, but he always shows up in Suicide Squad comics.
He does, but that's still a rare thing when he shows up there. The first entire year of the New 52 run, he was a tease. He wasn't a presence.
Yeah, but every time they do an adaptation, anytime we've ever seen the Suicide Squad, now granted that's only in animations, but anytime they've ever animated it, the Joker is always involved somehow. Because that's Harley's way out.
The time they bucked the trend. It could have been the time that they went and said, he's there, we'll have a small bit, but he's not stealing the show, which is really, frankly, what he did. And that's a little bit of what I got a problem with.
See, and I don't think that he stole the show, because to me, and I could be wrong here, and I think the reason why a lot of people think he stole the show is because they made the whole trailer about him, or they were expecting it to be a Joker movie because he was all over the trailer. To me, he was an accessory to Harley, and he was there for Harley's backstory. But there's one little nitpick I have there, but we're not going to get into that because it's not Suicide Squad.
The accessory that Harley needed in that movie was the accent that they didn't give her because Margot Robbie couldn't do it. So what I needed to hear was an, oh, Mr. J, not actually have Mr. J in the movie. Mr. J, excuse me. And the other thing, he is the Jared Leto's Joker is the only one to come close to Mark Hamill for what I think is an unhinged Joker. That there's that one scene that was in the trailer when, are you going to kill me? Oh, I'm not going to kill you. I'm just going to hurt you really, really, really bad.
And I seem like I'm hating on him a lot. I'll give you that. Because he did, I mean, genuinely, when you hear the stories, he creeped everybody else on the set out with how
With the 3,000 different origin stories and how they're all heartbreaking, but they're all obviously lies.
Shipping them the rats.
Well, that's another case of, and I don't think I would enjoy being friends with the actor. Actor, like person, Jared Leto, no thank you. He's done some roles that I think are really good. He's made some music that's not bad.
30 Seconds to Mars.
I guess part of it is, yes.
But I think part of it is, too, for me, that I look at him and he's got tattoos of himself on himself. It almost looks like he's got.
But so does Steve-O. We all love him.
That was in the concept, not in what ended up in the movie. And that's the other thing that's really bad about this is we saw way too much of Joker before the movie. And everybody freaked out because his tattoo said, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
They didn't actually say that in the movie.
Yeah, but that's funny.
And I think you're right. It might be that a little bit of it was that overdose of hype. I just realized, though, the moment where he showed up where it was pitch perfect, when he was wearing the tuxedo.
Yes.
When he was in the helicopter with the tuxedo.
Yes, that was so perfect.
That was a spot on perfect Joker moment. It was that rescue that isn't quite really a decent rescue. Just leave her. You know, that there was a perfect Joker-Harley interaction. I think there was too much of the I'm up in the club gangster Joker before that.
Sure.
I didn't mind it. Okay, so we've covered Penguin, we've covered Joker, we've covered Alfred. I just want to tip my hat to Gary Oldman, Jim Gordon, and Gotham's Jim Gordon, both pretty awesome.
Oh, yes.
Hey, how about that time that Robin was played by Cobra Commander?
You're right.
About that time that Robin was played by Michael Cera and I wasn't completely annoyed by him.
Or that time that Robin was played by my former teenage crush and he sucked.
How about that time that the Joker was played by everybody's former teenage crush? Because wasn't Jared Leto one of those Tiger Beat guys for a while?
Jordan Catalano. It's Jordan Catalano. Sorry. Everyone who saw My So-Called Life knows what I'm talking about. So we're going to move on to other comic adaptations. And there's a couple that I want to hit because there have been a couple of incarnations. We've got a new Spider-Man coming out. So that's three big movie Spider-Men. Who's our favorite Spider-Man so far?
And we still don't get a Spider-Man Miles Morales.
Okay. I know, right?
Okay. I'm sorry. I love the new kid so much.
Oh,
so funny. So good.
An amazing sense of comedic timing. He's just awkward enough for the role.
Like, and he's tiny.
Andrew Garfield never came off as awkward to me. No, he came off as smarmy.
He's actually like a realistic nerdy kid, not oh my gosh, I'm such an awkwardly nerdy guy, but you know the moment I take my glasses off and get my spider powers, I'm going to be hunky.
And here's my problem with Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. You're telling me that with all of that hair, that Matt Smith level of like Doctor Who pompadour, that all of a sudden he throws the hood on and it all disappears and it's just gone and perfectly coiffed? No.
That's because the stuntman doesn't have the hair.
Right, exactly. No, because that stuff's got a poof.
As I agree with Timba in the chat, the new Spider-Man is gold. And I'm sorry, Aunt May as Marissa Tomei as Aunt May. I am loving this because it's a new take on Aunt May. And it's not going to, you know, be something harsh.
It's not Golden Girl Aunt May. Yeah.
I loved Sally Field as Aunt May in the Andrew Garfield movies, but I'm excited by this new Aunt May.
And I'm looking at the fact that, like, okay, there's he's a fanboy on top of everything.
Yes.
Is also a great fact. The fact that he was absolutely floored that Tony Stark, not Iron Man, Tony Stark showed up.
Yeah
he acknowledged the Iron Man thing, but he really loved Tony Stark's brain. That's that he was a fanboy of the science, which is at the core one of Spider-Man's key things that is missed out so much in movies. Was Tobey Maguire a scientist? Nah, he showed up at a lab every once in a while. Was Andrew Garfield a credible scientist? I'm trying to be charitable. No.
No.
But this kid comes off as someone who genuinely had that love of science, that want and desire. When he was confused that there wasn't actually a scholarship involved in the moment, that was perfect. And then you get, like, when he's in the suit, when he's just doing the wisecracking and everything, his wisecracks were on point.
Yeah.
So much. And of course, it didn't hurt that his foil was, you know, Paul Rudd.
Yeah. As Ant-Man. That was so great. So the trailer for the new Spider-Man, he's sitting in the lunchroom with his buddy looking at a girl and he's like, oh, she's so hot. When did she change her hair? Blah, blah, blah. We should probably stop staring before it gets creepy. Yeah, we really should. And then there's a girl down at the end of the table. It's already creepy. That to me is Peter Parker.
Also, shout out to somebody we've already mentioned once before today that is in the best role I think he'll ever be in my mind.
Sid Caesar?
No, Michael Keaton as the Vulture. Oh my. When they revealed that, I was like, Birdman?
No, I know. Which, by the way, is a really good movie.
Oh, no. Birdman is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's a confusing experience, and I'm really glad that I watched it, and it's definitely one of those films that Hollywood loves, but it's made so much more impactful because it's Michael Keaton, and getting that role right after he did Birdman, I think, is perfect timing.
And then, of course, you know, you've got Edward Norton prancing around in his underwear, which surprisingly didn't annoy me.
Yeah.
It was like Edward Norton was the perfect foil in that movie.
So I digress. Edward Norton brings us to the Hulk. We've had a lot of different Hulks.
He was such a good Hulk. Bruce Banner. Yeah. I was so disappointed that there was some, was it a contract dispute or a...
Creative differences.
Creative differences that he did such a good Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
You know, he was the one who recommended Mark Ruffalo for the role, too, though.
Who did a great job. And the nerdy bromance between him and Tony Stark done very, very well.
And I don't think that we would have had that with Ed Norton's Hulk.
No.
Yeah, it would have been a different Hulk.
It would have been a kind of cool fest.
I'm actually pretty happy with... I say that those two rival each other. I think for Avengers, I prefer Mark Ruffalo, but I don't ever want to see... that Hulk have its own movie, but for having his own, carrying his own movie as the Hulk, I think Ed Norton wins.
We're not going to see a standalone Hulk movie. The next Hulk movie, the next Hulk involvement is in Thor 3 in Ragnarok. Yeah.
I also don't think that Ed Norton could have pulled off a ScarJo romance like Mark Ruffalo did. That would have been weird.
Yeah.
Mark Ruffalo certainly got the tortured and tender side of Bruce Banner.
Oh,
down.
He's got the puppy dog eyes. I mean, he's got it all. Oh,
but can they all beat
Bill
Bixby?
He's so dreamy.
Yeah. They beat Bill Bixby.
Oh, come on, Bixby and Lou Ferrigno.
It's classic.
I gotta go for the original,
and it gets the honorable mention.
I met Lou Ferrigno once.
Really.
Kind of rather insisted I talk to him and like physically picked me up and sat me down in front of him.
Nice.
He's partially deaf, right? So him picking you up and putting you down in front of him might have something to do with that.
Well, no, it was I was walking by and I hadn't even noticed he was there. And I think that was the tragic thing is nobody was at his little booth he had there at the con. And it was like, he's like, you will talk to me now.
Okay.
it's an awesome thing.
Because I've heard a lot of experiences where fans are like, I tried to say hi to Lou Ferrigno and he just cold shouldered me. And it's like, you know, he's partially deaf, right? Probably didn't hear you.
And he's had almost as many Marvel cameos as Stan Lee now.
Yeah, yeah. Not quite. No, he's probably the second most.
The fact that they're now doing Stan Lee cameos in the animated movies.
So, all right. So, I want to move into, and we're going to jump over to DC again. Favorite Superman?
None. Oh. Any of them?
Christopher Reeves.
No. And it won't be Christopher Reeve for that whole spinning the earth backwards to time travel to save Lois Lane thing.
No. You cannot fault the man for that movie. I mean, there were some moments in his movies where it was just like, really? His enemy is an accountant? Like, there were things where it was off.
Yeah, but it was Richard Pryor.
I expected him to go back in time and save a bunch of crap lousy whales, and maybe that would have made Star Trek IV even better. But,
yeah, like, Superman shows up to stop them from messing with the whales?
Have
you noticed the fours are the bad movies?
I gotta say that I think that Christopher Reeves is probably like a diehard one for me. I haven't seen anyone really break it, but a good honorable mention does go to Dean Cain because I really did enjoy his Clark Kent from Lois and Clark. Ugh. And the fact that he's playing Supergirl's dad is pretty awesome.
Okay, that is amusing, yes. I don't know. I haven't watched enough of Supergirl. Have they had him show up yet? Because what I watched, he kept mentioning the other guy, and I'm like, way to undercut your character by mentioning there's someone more badass.
I think he eventually shows up, but not in the first season. You get like a bit of the cape, but you don't really get a scene. The idea is you don't see him. Because he wants Kara to stand on her own two feet, which I think is pretty awesome.
Nutty.
I'll give it to Supergirl for bringing back Calista Flockhart.
Supergirl, the TV show, by the way, is the only Supergirl I can stomach.
Superman, though. Superman's never been a character that I've enjoyed.
No, he's perfect. And
he's on easy mode. He's a D&D paladin, and I loathe paladins.
But, you know, we've been watching an anime series recently called One Punch Man that I absolutely enjoy. And he's a superhero that is so powerful that he can destroy any of his opponents with one punch. He's Superman. He's completely invulnerable. He cannot die. The problem is he's bored. Yeah. So he doesn't want to be a superhero anymore because there's no challenge in it. And he goes and he finds the villain and he pops him one in the chin and the villain explodes and a mountain gets cut in half and he doesn't care. And it's the show is incredibly charming and really endearing. And I love Saitama, and the whole One Punch Man thing is great. Yeah, One Punch! And his special attack, by the way, is he just punches. Throws more than one punch. It's actually called, when he throws his special attack, it's continuous normal punches, and he just throws more than one punch, and he just blows you up with them. The problem is this is what I hate about Superman, is that he's perfect. He's Buffy. He's perfect and pretty and can kick and punch and die, and no one will ever defeat him, but I'm supposed to care something for this character, and I don't.
I'm going to say he also has the very Buffy problem of, and my love life is horrible.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing they can ever seem to make Superman threatened by is his crush on Lois Lane. That's the only major threat they ever seem to be able to pull out for the man. So, yeah, not a fan, but I do have nostalgia for the original Superman movies. I do love them. I hold a special place in what should be a heart for them
because I think it's because of the natural charisma of Christopher Reeve. I think the actor himself is so endearing, and if you watch anything else that he's done, and I will give a massive shout out to the movie Noises Off, which was the last movie he finished before his accident that paralyzed him, which is about a play gone wrong, is hilarious. And the guy is an amazingly talented actor who did it's what we've been describing before with these other actors, is that it's not his fault. Chris Reeve did the best that he could
what he had at the time.
Right, which was, let's spin the earth backwards to save Lois Lane.
And there's countless documentaries that talk about the problems with those original movies and the creative struggle that the writer and the directors were having.
But at least there weren't giant spiders.
Sorry, I'm laughing because Timba just said, noises off, Tim, the doors, which is probably my favorite Christopher Reeve role ever.
And noises off was so good.
Can I give a shout out to the Superman we're glad we didn't have, but I would have loved
Nick Cage,
to
watch. No. I'm so glad Nick that Cage. Didn't happen.
Nick Cage in the holographic Superman costume fighting a giant spider.
You know, I'm gonna have to roll this into the actual episode, though. Hmm. Nick Cage is by now, by all accounts, not the best Ghost Rider live action adaptation. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has one going on right now.
Oh, good. That is someone fixed
really
it.
Really good.
Because we said Jason Momoa can do no wrong, or Patton Oswalt can do no wrong. Yeah. Nick Cage really has a hard time doing any right.
Oh, hey, come on.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry, he's rivaling Shia LaBeouf there.
Oh, Con Air.
There were bees involved.
So
no, Con Air is that rare moment.
Everybody's got one. I mean, Keanu Reeves has.
Hey, if Con Air can make me hate Colomini.
I'm going to stray to fantasy casting for a moment with Con Air as a tie-in. If we were ever going to do a movie that had, Firebug for Batman. Mm-hmm. If we ever had a Firebug, I'm sorry, but if you don't consider Steve Buscemi, get out.
Steve Buscemi would be a good, Firebug. I also think he'd be a good Mad Hatter.
Oh, yes. But I think Firebug would tie in a little bit better the fact that he actually was a firefighter, you know?
If you look at the, by that same token, if you want firefighters, if you want a Firebug, get Dennis Leary.
Yeah, well, and the whole rescue me thing. So Tim says Nick Cage's last good role was Moonstruck. Snap out of it. Sorry.
What was the vampire movie he was in?
Kiss of the Vampire. No. Stop.
Face Off.
And says Nick Cage is glorious. He's the Congo of actors.
Nick Cage gives me hope that one day I will be a major Hollywood star.
Well, get born from a Hollywood dynasty family, and maybe you will. So let's move on to The Punisher.
Well, if we're going to mention The Punisher, I think we've already Tech has already mentioned his Punisher, which is also my favorite adaptation.
From Daredevil.
Sure. I'm not sure. I have a tie.
Okay.
Oh.
I have a tie.
Dolph Lundgren?
No.
Thomas Jane.
Thomas Jane. The short Dirty Laundry where Ron Perlman is... the bad guy. It's a short film. The Punisher's just trying to do his laundry and he ends up in a fight. Amazing. Amazing.
Was that Thomas Jane? Did they bring him back for that? Because Thomas Jane was the Punisher with Travolta as his foil. Was it the same guy?
I don't think that was the same guy. I think that was somebody else, I believe.
Yes. Okay.
I could be wrong.
Dirty Laundry was definitely a good... fan adaptation and probably one of the truest to character because it's just he seems so exasperated by the fact that he can't just do his laundry.
Yeah,
he's so frustrated and just angry. And I think Frank Castle's at his best when he's really like, really, guys, this is beneath me, but I'm gonna kick your butts anyway.
The Punisher is not a comic that I read a lot of or any of. And looking at the modern adaptations of it, the modern trope of casting combat veterans as some kind of villain that we all have to live with and that every combat veteran is broken, which is why I really, 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 really hate Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Where they portray every Iraq and Afghanistan veteran as some kind of damaged individual that doesn't belong in normal society. I had to swerve out of the road because I thought it was an IED. It turned out it was a plastic bag, and I'm not a normal person anymore because I went to war. I cannot stand that. But there's something about the second season of Daredevil and their version of Frank Castle that I understood it. It was mm-hmm. perhaps the only time I've seen in modern movies where they did the trope of the damaged veteran, and I was okay with it. And
yeah, he was a foil, but he wasn't the bad guy.
Right.
He was in the context of, I guess, what you consider bad guys in those movies, because the Marvel Netflix universe, oh my, is that a dark universe where even the good guys are bad guys.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yes.
And they have this tradition in the series. I mean, if you look at Jessica Jones, and mm-hmm. where they have the PTSD victim trying to become a better person main character.
Yes.
And I'm not annoyed by her.
No, because it's not exploitive.
Right. It was done wonderfully. And then you've got Kilgrave. You've got David Tennant, the doctor, playing the creepiest, rapiest bad guy there possibly could be. And I want to see more of him because he's just so bad.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that the Netflix Marvel series so far have been pretty decent. I mean, we're only partway through Iron Fist, and it's the worst of them all, but it's still better than a lot of other shows.
Yeah, I will spoil nothing by saying it picks up and gets even better.
Yeah, Luke Cage.
Yes.
The treatment Luke Cage got, I think, is so powerful. It's when same thing with Jessica Jones, but I think Jessica Jones, we kind of expected a little bit more mm-hmm. because of her storyline. But the Luke Cage is so much more important and transcendent. It's more than just a comic book show.
I have to have a Luke Cage story. I have to tell my Luke Cage story. I watched the first 7 or 8 episodes and I was on the fence. I thought it was a brilliantly acted series. I think Mike Coulter is incredible, and well, let's be honest, now he's gorgeous. And the whole show of, you know, Harlem in Reconstruction, and to me it was falling hollow, because how could you have a blaxploitation movie about a black martial artist in Harlem trying to make it a better place, and you're not going to have the Wu-Tang Clan on the soundtrack, or not even you're not even going to have an instrumental soundtrack, and the RZA's not going to be the one doing it, and he does soundtracks now, and even his cousin the Jizz has been doing soundtrack work, and this annoys me. You're not even going to have Funk Flex from Hit 102 talk about how this is what New York sounds like. You're not going to have any of this going on when this is the New York that I know. This is the New York that I love, because I'm a New Yorker by marriage, and I'm very proud of that fact. It's like those guys that marry into a Texas family and suddenly think they're Texans. I suddenly think I'm a New Yorker. I get it. But the fact that they had no Wu-Tang in the soundtrack annoyed me until the episode that had a cameo by Method Man, and then he freestyled a song called Bulletproof Love on the radio. And okay, so they got an original member of the Wu-Tang Clan to come on and be in love with this character, and it's a you know what, okay, this gets my respect now, because they get it, they understand what it is to be a black superhero in New York.
And I'm gonna roll back to early episodes where Harlem's Paradise was heavily it was a character in and of itself throughout that whole series.
Oh, and the musical stars that they got were great.
Anytime they would cut to Cottonmouth or they would show him, they'd have an amazing band in the background.
Mm.
And it was different sounds that suited the Harlem vibe so very well.
And the Harlem that they were trying to bring back.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's that Harlem revival. They did it through music better than they did through anything.
Absolutely.
So apparently Malik, this is from Timba, Malik from A Tribe Called Quest did the music for Luke Cage.
All right, I'll give him that.
So, no complaints.
No complaints. All right, redemption to Luke Cage. If you're not going to pick the Wu-Tang Clan, you're going to pick A Tribe Called Quest. So, all right, I get it.
Yeah,
respect.
And here's another fact with the Marvel series as well, because we've kind of we've been avoiding mentioning the other Daredevil movie, I think, a bit.
Yeah, and that's Ben where Affleck's Daredevil, his Daredevil
has been redeemed has been redeemed with Charlie Cox's version of the Daredevil.
Yes.
With that, he is genuinely likable. He is a likable man who plays a damaged character incredibly well. And I like his take on it. I like the modern Marvel Netflix take on it. And it opened the door to all of these others.
And
because if he hadn't been a good adaptation, we wouldn't have had Jessica Jones. We definitely wouldn't have had Luke Cage and Iron Fist. And we wouldn't have the Defenders coming out.
Well, I'm not sure that that is true, because when they started Daredevil 1, the plan was to have all four and a Defender series. That was the deal. We wouldn't have had a Daredevil 2 before then.
I think if he hadn't been successful, though, even with Netflix and the fact that they generally tend to bring things to fruition and give them a chance. I mean, they've given some awful, awful original series chances.
We're looking at you, Hemlock Grove.
We're looking at you, Pacific Heat, the Archer ripoff that was just so
the,
so
the
bad.
Australian Pacific Heat, isn't it great?
I couldn't get through 5 minutes of that without wanting to watch Archer and then just watching Archer.
Yeah.
So here's.
I mean, they might have given a chance, but I don't think without his performance, I don't think the hype train would have caught on. I don't think people would have anticipated it. I know for sure. I wouldn't have been waiting for the moment Iron Fist dropped if it wasn't for the Daredevil series being as good as it was.
Here's my take on the Netflix series. As a comfortably heterosexual man who is now two glasses of wine into his evening, this is what I can say. Charlie Cox and that kid from the Mighty Ducks in Daredevil, they're really, really cute. Jessica Jones, the sexiest pair of jeans ever put on film. Oh my God, do I love that TV show. Mike Coulter as Luke Cage, that is sexy.
And I'm sorry, but there's someone more important than all of them. The actual hero of all of the series. Yes. That's Claire.
Yes.
Rosario Dawson is the beating heart, the moral center, and
but I didn't get a chance to get to the disgustingly scruffy Loras Tyrell as Iron Fist, which I don't know. He could light on fire in the next episode and I don't think I'd care very much. I'm not there yet.
You don't love him yet?
No, I don't love him yet.
And Nymeria Sand as Colleen Wing?
Okay, yeah. Colleen Wing is pretty cute, but they get so much wrong about Japanese martial arts in that.
I think the Danny Rand portrayal, where a lot of people I know that have criticisms of it have said he's out of touch, he's clueless. And I said it myself, he seems like a moron. He seems like he's coming to the world expecting everybody to hand him everything.
He's a little boy.
He's been away for 15 years. Yeah, he's a 10-year-old boy, 15 years displaced from the real world.
Yeah, he's got arrested development. He hasn't matured properly because instead of growing up, he was sitting in a monastery with his sensei or whatever they call it. Shifu.
Who gave him an Aston Martin?
Yeah, he really thought that walking into the front door of his company, "Hi, I'm Danny Rand. Can I talk to my old boss, please?" He really thought that this would work.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't even talking to my old bosses. Talk to my dad's partner, because I was 10 when I left.
Right. Like, and then, oh my God, this is my cousin. I grew up with her. She was the nicest girl ever. I'm going to break into her apartment and cage her dog in a room, and this is all going to be great. Why didn't she like me for this?
And then, you know, like, I can forgive a lot having now seen the whole thing and not saying anything. It's the fact that he was displaced from time. He was in a fantasy world for 15 years.
Literally.
The fact that he has a working iPod after all that time amazes me.
But where did he find a plug in Kunlun to keep that thing charged?
They had batteries.
He charges it with his chi.
Yes, that's right. He charges it with his chi.
Yes.
He wants it to work, and so it does.
Yep.
That's why he was the Iron Fist, because he was so obstinately concerned with his batteries that he became the master of his chi.
Yeah. So the reason why we didn't realize that it was Malik from A Tribe Called Quest is he's using, I believe, his birth name, which is Ali Shahid Muhammad. We saw that name at the beginning of every episode.
Sure.
So that's good to know. So, we love the Netflix series. Any other really good comic adaptations we want to point out here? I do want to give props to, I believe, what Tech said might be his favorite comic book movie. Do you want to do this one?
No, please. I don't remember.
We saw Logan last night.
Wow. Oh, haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Wow.
I can't believe I haven't seen it because I am utterly and completely like, forget Batman. Logan is my favorite character in all of comic books, mainly because he's a short, powerful Canadian who everybody knows is Canadian and doesn't go, oh, that's good, eh? What's that about?
And it's not bad that a very tall Australian is playing him because Hugh Jackman kind of nails him. Even in the bad movies, he still nails him.
So as a Logan fan, this is what I'm going to tell you to go watch this movie. Is that this is the first time in, I think, what, 7 Wolverines that we've had in the movies? This is the first time that we get Berserker Weapon X.
Yes.
Ooh.
It's
and
there was a brief bit of it. There was a brief bit of it in Days of Future Past.
No, there wasn't.
But you needed the R rating for this.
No. What you have seen before is nothing compared to what you get in this movie. And it really makes it worthwhile. And there are tropes in this movie that I absolutely despise. I've always hated, ever since I saw the movie The Boy Who Could Fly, I have despised the trope of the mute child trauma victim who, oh my God, he or she was so traumatized that they just don't talk anymore. I hate that trope. It is garbage writing. It's, you know what it is?
No, battery's not included.
You know what it is? It's, you have a child actor who can't act, so you just picked a trope to get them to shut up so we wouldn't have to deal with their crap acting. And now, the only time that this would have been acceptable is if Lucas had done that to Jake Lloyd. Oh my God, he's a child slave who's so traumatized that he's just going to shut up for the first 2 hours and we're not going to notice that he's a garbage actor. Maybe that would have been acceptable. But in this movie, it strikes you across the face. I really hate the trope, but the little girl that they have playing Laura?
Yeah,
Laura. When she screams in rage.
Yeah, when she berserks,
they cast her on that scream, and she does a wonderful job.
And she's a really good actress.
And she's a good actress who just happens to not talk for half the movie.
This movie, again, we're not going
to
spoil.
I have to follow a tiny thought. Could we have continued the not letting Jake Lloyd talk all the way to Hayden Christensen and just had Darth Vader like pantomime everything?
That would have been great. Or if we just overdubbed with James Earl Jones for everything, that'd be fine too.
Yes.
No, I'm just trying to imagine a subtitled but not voiced version of no.
All right. So in Logan, you have serious feels for both Logan and Xavier. It's worth seeing. Go watch it. It is not my favorite comic book movie. My favorite comic book movie is also rated R, though, because it's so well done, and that is Deadpool.
Yes, I was going to get there.
And Ryan Reynolds fixed the horrible Deadpool.
We don't talk about that. That movie did not exist. That was a shampoo commercial.
It was a shampoo
commercial. What are you going to do, sew my mouth shut?
It's terrible.
Yes, they did.
And he poked fun at himself so much throughout there. Like, don't make the suit animated.
Yeah, green or animated. Yep.
It's funny to say that Ryan Reynolds was both the best and the worst adaptation of Deadpool ever.
Yeah.
But this proves again the point that I was making about Lego Batman, that this is one of those movies where love for the character and love for the franchise will shine through over everything, and that even if it's a fan paid for movie that nobody thought would ever succeed like Deadpool, or a crappy kids movie made by a Danish toy company, that it can shine through if it's got the love for the character.
Yeah. And the trailer for Deadpool 2, go look it up, slow it down, read the essay about Old Man in the Sea at the end. Oh, it's spot on. Everything I think about that story, it is spot on and said with Deadpool's voice. It's totally worth it. Plus, there's Firefly references in that trailer.
You're assuming I didn't do that?
I'm speaking to the listeners here.
Fourth wall break.
Yeah.
In a fourth wall break.
That's like 16 walls. Exactly. Is there any other adaptations we want to throw out there? This is going to be like a lightning round that we need to point at this was done really well.
If you haven't played any of the video games, I recommend that everybody plays the Arkham series of Batman games. It is the best. It has all of the animated cast of voices, including Tara Strong as a wonderful version of Harley Quinn. So, yes, that is correct, ladies and gentlemen. Twilight Sparkle, the My Little Pony, is Harley Quinn and doing a really good job of it. And they also did, as a prequel to Suicide Squad, there is an Arkham Suicide Squad animated movie done with Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill.
I think that was actually a prequel to the Arkham movies, games rather.
No, it was after it was after the Arkham games, but it was before Suicide Squad, the movie, because it has Suicide Squad going on a mission. It's it's also the one where, how could I say this politely, Harley Quinn beds Deadshot.
Yeah.
Oh, true to the New 52 comics.
Right.
Yeah.
Violently.
That's pretty great.
Violently beds Deadshot.
Yes.
Well, my recommendation is, if you want to see a good DC adaptation, check out animated stuff. Their live action generally sucks, and their animated generally is good. It's a good rule. Marvel tends to do much better when they are the actual studio and it's not Fox doing it. Marvel tends to be better live
Except
action.
Except for Logan.
Yeah, Logan. Well, Deadpool was also Fox.
Mm.
So, but Marvel's animated tends to not be so good. And Fox is hit and Sony are hit and miss. So
I have to say this about Fox movies, like Deadpool and Logan. They're one-offs. Fox is really good at doing sci-fi one-offs. Firefly, Space Above and Beyond, and about everything else I can mention that Fox is good at.
They didn't cancel Deadpool halfway through, though.
No, but they sewed his lips shut in the first movie.
Yeah.
And it took fans to get the movie actually made, much like Serenity.
Yeah, thanks, Fox.
Trying to think of other comic book adaptations that I enjoyed, and I'm drawing a blank.
I think there's one for you, XK, that hasn't come out yet that I would love to see. Just like with all the Ninja Turtle movies, I would love to see a good Casey Jones.
Yeah, Casey Jones from the Jim Henson movies.
With all of the Batman movies that have come out, we haven't gotten Nightwing, and we haven't gotten NITE. Nightwing.
Oh, you know what? I was going to say it, and I thought that would be a complete digression.
So XK, explain for the fans, who is Nightwing and who is Nightwing?
Oh, yes, Nightwing. Well, I think we all know I know who you're all thinking when I say Nightwing.
Nightwing is grown-up Robin.
Yes, it's Dick Grayson all grown up and trying to be his own Batman.
In the city of Bloodhaven.
Yes, in the city of Bloodhaven. But he's not my favorite Bloodhaven resident ever. No, that goes to the young orphan Tad Reierstad, a young man who rivals the Joker in his short time for origin stories that probably weren't true, and who holds the record for being the shortest-lived superhero before being shot 6 times. Young Tad Reierstad grew up watching action movies and reading comic books, much like we did, except he had no concept of reality or morality. He thought that 80s action flicks had it right. When you saw the bad guy, you beat him up and you killed him.
So it's some guy with a baseball bat in the middle of the night calling himself Nightwing, just pummeling people.
Well, he doesn't have a baseball bat. He has billiard cues because low budget and billiard balls to throw at them. But yeah, he gets shot a bunch of times. And when he goes to the hospital, he refuses to give any other name but the name he got from an all-night chicken wing place, Nightwing.
Nightwing. Wicked.
He's only appeared in, I'd say, 12 comics. I own all of them. I think he would be an amazing character to revive if they wanted to go a different direction and bring someone in the world that isn't in the world. I will admit I've written over 30,000 words worth of fan fiction regarding him, it seems, at this point in time. So I'm not the most unbiased person. But he's still not my favorite obscure character ever. That would be Danny the Sentient Street.
Okay.
Daddy was a poor kid who died on a street. His spirit took it over, and now he can teleport around the world and save the Flash.
Okay.
Ouch.
So, Jason wants to remind us, where was it, that if you want to see some awesome Harley Quinn and what she could be and should be, look up the scenes from the Injustice comics between her and Black Canary. They're absolutely amazing.
Oh, yes.
And they are.
Her interaction with Lobo.
Yeah. Oh, all of that. That is, everything about it is amazing. And she totally outstrips the Joker. She is amazing. There is a fan comic that was done, and I think the artist's name is it Shinies,
or he also goes by Nibizial.
Yeah, and
his real name is Stefan Stepchik.
Yeah,
he writes a bunch of comics, but if you want to see the women of DC done correctly, and beautifully and not exploitively, you got to look up the art of a guy named Shinies.
And there's a great arc that he has penned, drawn, whatever, where Joker tells Harley he's getting jealous of Ivy, and he says Ivy's got to go, and it goes to a really good place, and it will, it's, he gets Harley, he really gets Harley, and it's worth looking at. So one of the last comic book adaptations we have to talk about Riverdale, which is become like my latest obsession. And I've watched today's episode, which I'm guessing the serial killer hasn't.
I'm going to point out that I gave up watching today's episode right away when I got home because I love you guys.
Yay. Aww. We're more important than Riverdale. That's saying something, because Riverdale's amazing.
I'm going to say right now, Jughead is totally, totally awesome in that show.
He's amazing. And if you don't love Jughead, there is some... Juggy is so good. If you don't love him, there's something wrong with you.
Now, here's my problem.
I'm Team Jetty all the way.
Yeah, I'm still wanting Betty and Veronica to hook up. I kind of want like a whole three-way.
I have always wanted Betty and Veronica to hook up ever since I was a young kid.
I just gave a cutesy Hollywood nickname to Jughead and Betty off the top of my head. What happened to me?
Riverdale happened to you. Right. It is the most CW of all CW shows, and it is glorious.
So this is my problems with the show, of which there are many, but I will name the top two. One, Miss Grundy is not hot. She's supposed to look like Jughead's mom.
Yes, but you didn't watch far enough to find out that Miss Grundy was old Miss Grundy. The one we saw stole her identity.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So
that was a good subversion. That was perfect.
So horrible. Don't care. Two, that in my mind, growing up reading the Archie comics like we all did, that Betty and Veronica were of equal hotness, just in different flavors. In like different flavors, right? It's the chocolate and vanilla.
Yes.
Except that from everything I've watched of the episode snippets that I've seen and just cannot force myself to care to watch anymore, it's that that Betty is like beat yourself in the face with rusty chains exponentially levels hotter than Veronica. Oh my God, Betty's so hot.
No. But I get your original point where they're supposed to be different kinds of hot. Yeah. That's where it comes across to me, as it does. Because I thought you were going to say the opposite. I thought you were going to say Veronica was that way, because that was my initial impression. And yeah, I think initially, that she's legal for me to be able to say that.
But then again, Bats, you and I have always disagreed on this, because I remember we have had this long-standing feud over who is the sexier Dax, because I will always pick Jadzia and you will always pick Ezri, and we can both agree that they're both hot and they're both different flavors, but you are wrong.
Did we have a flavor switch? Because suddenly I'm going for the catty one.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is, the serial killer and I have closer tastes in women, but
you both find me attractive. So there we go.
It all works.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for me, why would you choose? Let's just have all the decks because it's wonderful.
Absolutely.
Although I will
even
say,
the serial killer one.
Oh my God. She's the hottest. And by the way, Mirror Universe Ezri is so much hotter than Mirror Universe Jadzia.
I think we're suddenly on a different episode where it's who's the best Mirror Universe.
Yeah,
character.
Wait, we were supposed to go back to Riverdale, but anyway,
Riverdale.
Riverdale for me.
Wait. Oh, but Betty and Veronica are equally hot and different flavors in this, and I think that Veronica starts out hotter in her attitude. And then Betty, as she, you end up seeing all sides of her personality, becomes so much hotter. And so, like, it's an ebb and flow kind of thing. Like, one episode you might be all for Veronica and one episode you might be for Betty. But what I love about Riverdale is in the comics, it always kind of feels like there's an animosity or a competition between the two of them. That's not a thing in Riverdale. I mean, they even have at one point where Betty's into Archie and Veronica ends up kissing Archie. But she's like, yeah, but no, I care more about the relationship with Betty than I ever would about any boy. And I feel terrible about it. And they end up realizing that their relationship is the most important there. And that's what I love. It's not a competition between women.
I'm going to point out, for me, the CW-ness of the show is one of the major... not failings. It's one of the things that I kind of irks me and makes me think I shouldn't like the show as much as I do, because the CW has taken one of my absolute favorite comic book characters of all time and made him into a whiny, frustratingly emo dork. Oliver Queen is not supposed to be emo. He is supposed to be brash, in your face, laughing all the way to the bank. Arrow has done wrong by him.
Yes, but I'm not done with Riverdale.
Riverdale has all of those little elements that romance is more important than plot, that everybody's pretty. It's like even Big Ethel isn't Big Ethel, and that frustrates me.
But no, but she's not
She's
Beth.
Super cute.
What's the girl from Stranger Things that goes missing?
I actually haven't watched Stranger Things beyond one episode, but which is weird because it seems right up my alley. But it suffers from all those things. But at the same time, it's love of what it's doing. Again, it goes back to love. The love of the source material is what redeems it so well.
Yeah. And because we have these tropes that we have known for longer than any of us have been alive, because Archie Comics has been at the forefront of comics forever. Okay. Yes. The forever Archie Comics. I mean, because they have been in grocery stores from day one. They were on the front end of digital comics. Mm-hmm. They were everywhere. Because we have all of that background knowledge, they're able to use that to make you care about certain things and to not have to explain certain things, which is fantastic. I love Josie and the Pussycats in there. And I love Kevin is involved. And I love a bit about Moose. Yeah, all of Reggie and everything. I can tell you that what Jason says about Riverdale is Archie does take both in the end and has a poly relationship. I see a bit of a triad, if anything, or maybe Betty and Veronica are together and Archie might end up with one of them. Or maybe it'll be Betty and Jughead and she's also with Veronica. I don't care.
The thing for me, too, is I watched Riverdale as a laugh because I worried that it was going to be emo Archie. I'm pleasantly surprised by the fact that Archie remains the clueless center of everything. But when it opened up with a murder and shady sexual shenanigans right out of the gate, I was hooked.
I thought that was going to be a problem, but it ended up not being a problem.
Jughead's narration over that dark undertones of the town made it. Yeah, but that's what got me. And then I kind of felt guilty until it started getting really good.
So we're going to wrap this up. Do you have anything you'd like to pimp, XK?
I am currently working on too many projects that will never see fruition.
Excellent. So he would like to pimp his bar fridge, which is empty because he's drank all the Guinness. And Tech?
If you would like to see more of my lessons in trying to learn Aikido the hard way, you could follow me at upsidedownandflying.tumblr.com. Soon to be a podcast. I have recorded 4 episodes on my phone that I have done while walking. Eventually, I will pummel the audio into Nutty's computer and into your ear holes where you can listen to me trying to rationalize why I have picked this incredibly silly martial art to try to understand a little bit more and suck a little bit less at.
All right. And you can find all of the contact info by listening to the end of this. And thank you so much, everyone. Thank you for 100 episodes. This is pretty cool.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. I love all of you.
This is a great milestone. It feels really good.
Except Nick. Nick, I don't love you. That would just be creepy and weird because I work with you. But thanks for listening anyways.
But love you, love Nick. Mike. And so thank you for joining us, everyone, for these last 6 years. Even if you weren't here for all six of them, you can always go back to all of those episodes. And thank you for the last 100 episodes. Us getting behind a microphone and nerding out has been fantastic. And I love being able to share that with all of you. So thank you so much.
On that note, everyone, I will ask to raise a glass to all of the mixed nutcases and to everyone who's listened and who's listening right now. Thank you very much for the last 100 episodes. And yet again, here's to 100 more. Cheers.
Cheers.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.